Cougar Nation, welcome again aboard the BYU Hype Train podcast as you hear my dogs barking in the background. It's been too long. I think the last couple of times we've recorded a show, it's been, I guess you guys have heard the Hype Cruise interviews. Is that the most recent things we've been talking about?
Yeah, I think we've put out three of them now. So the only one that we're sitting on is Max.
But either way, yeah. Max is probably the funniest one, though.
I don't know. Keanu's was pretty good.
Yeah.
They all were great. I won't spoil it, but the Mason quote with Max was just was too much.
Yeah. Stay tuned. Or you could go watch them now. I guess they're on YouTube, but nevertheless.
Either way, we need
content. If you haven't listened to it yet, wait so you can give us the podcast plays. If you've already watched it on the Coug Connect YouTube, then you're chilling.
Especially if you're driving to work, don't watch the YouTube one. If you're on the road, don't. Yeah.
Or maybe do. I don't know.
But reason I wanted to record tonight, I was just with our boy, Derek Hutchison, Hunter's cousin and my co-young men's leader. And he just he keeps asking, when's the pod coming out? And he's probably the only person who's asking, when is the pod coming out? So, Derek, this is for you.
Hey, man, we released one last week. What are you talking about?
He said, and I quote, I would listen to you guys talk about anything forever. So here we are. And we're probably going to have to talk about anything forever because it's the off season and we got to figure out something to talk about. I will say, not that it matters, but tonight I learned I am the best ultimate frisbee player of all time. As long as I'm playing against 11-year-old kids.
In your ward.
Yes, specifically
in the vineyard second.
The Sunset Beach ward. I am the best.
Wow, that's a fancy ward name. Holy cow!
I know.
Sunset Beach ward.
It just got reorganized, and so our ward literally just got a new name. And when they announced the name, everyone was just dying laughing.
Did they do a Facebook vote? Pick the new ward name. Wardy McWard face.
It has to have something to do with a landmark in the area, in the ward boundaries. Yeah. And Sunset Beach is a legitimate park in our ward boundaries. So
makes a little more sense. Yeah. Sunset is a landmark in most wards, I think. But yeah, the sunset and the beach. The beautiful beach at Utah Lake and Vineyard. that's the go-to. Whenever I think of the nice sunset over the beach, the waves crashing on the sand, I think of Vineyard.
Yeah.
Right before Saratoga Springs.
The beautifully dangerous algae bloom. I mean, all of it.
Yeah.
The ridiculous swarms of mayflies that interrupt my walks every single night.
Oh my goodness, dude. I went to my brother-in-law's house on Father's Day. And they're in Lehigh, but they're pretty much right on the north end of the lake. And their whole front of their house and garage is just covered in these flies and gnats and stuff.
Dude, if I could take you to my front porch right now, it's insane. It is so gross.
Take me there mentally.
You could have been the mayfly ward.
That would have been the good one. Yeah. Mayfly.
Talk about landmarks.
10 out of 10.
Oh, amazing. Again, this is all for you, Derek. This is your show. This is your content. This is what you asked for.
We're just going to cater the whole podcast to Derek.
Just to Derek.
Which, to be fair, I never have met a bigger BYU fan than Derek. So I think every podcast is technically catered specifically to him.
Oh, dude, no. Tonight, we were setting up the cones for Ultimate tonight. And one of us, the line that we did between the cones was super skewed. And he goes, oh my gosh, this is just like when Diane intercepted that ball against Boise and he was inbounds because the line was crooked. And I was dang, that is a reference. I got that reference, but that is a reference. That is my dude right there.
That's incredible. Love Derek. Big fan of that guy. Shout out.
Good stuff. Cool. Any other personal life updates that we want to
let's wrap up this episode.
And that is the BYU Hype Train. No, just kidding. Cool. So I think since last we've talked, there's been a bunch of BYU news. but at least on the recruiting front, do you guys want to give a quick shout out to your favorite piece of BYU news the last couple weeks?
Some BYU women's basketball player committed today. That's cool. I guess she's 4-star.
Yeah, top 40 player.
48.
Yeah. That's Canadian national team right there.
There, yeah.
Some random dude on Twitter called Genetics56 called BYU the worst fan base in all of college sports.
That's a good one.
I'll wear that like a badge of honor.
That probably comes second to the BYU women's basketball player committing. What else?
BYU baseball update. Austin Deming is awesome. I don't know when he's going to get drafted, but
draft is this July, I think, right? A couple of weeks.
Yeah, I've been watching the College Baseball World Series, and it's electric.
Yeah. NBA drafts tomorrow night.
No BYU players slated to be taken.
Nope. Although free J-Dogs at the now again Delta Center, right?
Delta Center, Jazz games on K-Jazz. Like, we're living in the 90s now, and if that bodes well for BYU football in the 90s, like, I'm all about it.
In like 3 years, it's over for all of you. In 2026.
BYU is finally going to get revenge. I thought there was some, like, uniform thing, but now I'm thinking I think it was just Dustin teasing a shirt.
Well, there was the whole uniform thing with the Lions, but
this is like our most thrilling podcast. We just try to like remember what's happened over the last month.
Well,
I mean,
is it better or worse when we talked about BYU basketball for 40 minutes?
This is worse. This is considerably worse.
I guess the real news that's happened in the last couple of weeks, BYU landed Harrison Taggart, who was a 4-star out of high school, was given a 4-star again. For those of you who don't know, I think he grew up a BYU fan, but did not hear from BYU's coaching staff at all during his entire recruitment process. I think he had like 20 plus offers from all over the country, like USC. Ended up committing to Oregon, went to Oregon for a year, had like 3 different position coaches, decided to transfer. And then the new coaching staff has just kind of given him they basically told him like, you're a number one target. And so now he's coming to BYU, which has like got the hype train fired up for me on the at least on the defensive side of the ball.
Incredible what then, like a coach and staff who will recruit can do to a program.
Yeah. Imagine that, like imagine contacting recruits and like difference that can make. Picking up the phone Harrison, and calling a 4-star quarter, like 4-star linebacker who runs a 4.5 40 literally in your backyard. Imagine what happens when you pick up the phone.
Harrison got more looks from the BYU coaching staff playing in Eugene, Oregon than he got playing in Draper, Utah.
Yeah.
Like they did a better job recruiting the kid while he was living, you know, 15 hours away than he was living 15 minutes away. And if that's not an indictment, then I don't know what is.
I mean, I'll shout it from the rooftops. Like, Elisa Tuiaki, X's and O's, fine, whatever. The recruiting, just absolute trash, and that's why BYU's defense has been trash for so long.
Yep. And now Jay Hill comes in. You bring in Eddie Hecker. You bring in AJ. I'm not going to say his last name. You bring in the other Weber State corner. Name escapes me. And now you bring in Harrison Taggart. You bring in a couple of Boise State guys. Like, that's half your starters now are, like, new transfers. Guys you just recruited this offseason and have brought in since the hiring of Jay Hill. So, big time for the Cougs. Another couple of big – I don't know. Do you want to keep talking about Harrison Taggart? I feel like at this point people have
– I mean, I was going to kind of go through the list of, like – I think the last time we recorded together was when Cody Epps decided
that was our emergency pod. Yeah.
Rejoin BYU. So that's how long it's been.
Oh, we got the UConn receiver. That's another thing that's so happened since we recorded live.
Since then, recent transfers BYU's picked up. Camden Garrett was rated an 85 on 24/7. Keelan Marion, who actually, I think Keelan Marion's probably the sneakiest big pickup that we've had, at least on the offensive side of the ball. That dude he's quick. He's a deep threat. I think he's bigger than Cody Epps, but I think he could push Cody Epps for reps. I really do.
He's got 3 years of eligibility left.
You think he starts like over Keanu Hill and Chase Roberts?
Not immediately.
Because he's got to push those guys. He's got to push those guys before he pushes Cody.
I mean, I think he's going to get a ton of run. But he was hurt a lot last year. But 2021 for UConn, he was UConn's leading receiver. And I think he had like a third of the total passing yards of UConn that year from like three different quarterbacks. Like if you go
And I think he had like 400 yards.
Yeah, 474 and five touchdowns on 28 receptions. So like dude is a major deep threat, but like if you go back, Coup Connect posted a video of him against Gabe Judiali when Gabe Judiali was at Vanderbilt, and that was just such a woefully thrown ball. But Keelan Marion had Gabe by a couple steps. And then they had to come back, make a great adjustment on the ball, pull it in for the touchdown. But I think he's going to be our sneakiest pickup of the year. I'm not sure he starts over any of the three guys that we've already had. I know one of those three guys is going to get hurt at some point in the year. And so Keelan Marion's definitely going to get a ton of run, but I actually feel pretty solid about the wide receiver room, at least more than I did a couple months ago. Like I don't think they obviously don't have like a number one guy, like a Puka level receiver, but let's be honest, they didn't really have a Puka level receiver most of last year because Puka wasn't on the field.
Yeah. Sure. That's an interesting question. Like which position group do you have the most confidence in and which do you have the least confidence in? Because I think you could honestly make a pretty good argument for every single one of them for both. Like, I think you could make an argument being like, secondary is my biggest question mark. And then I think you could make an argument being like, secondary is where I feel the most comfortable. Or wide receiver, I'm most comfortable. Or wide receivers are our biggest question mark. Like, I think you could legitimately go through, maybe except for defensive line, and make the argument for either or. That it's either like you feel best about or you feel the worst about.
So to answer your question, I feel the best about the O-line. I think like that, I'm going to be honest, like, I don't know if this year's O-line is better than last year's O-line, but I think overall, since like the offensive line has gotten infinitely better from December to now, even with the guys transferring out, like all you lost really was Campbell Barrington and Clark Barrington, which Clark Barrington, he was gone anyway. It's just kind of a bummer. He went to Baylor, but like we literally traded Campbell Barrington for Caleb Etienne, who is a starting right tackle for Oklahoma State, Paul Miley, who is a starting center at Utah, and Waylon Lapuaho, who is a starting left guard at Utah State. Yeah. So, like, the offensive line has gotten significantly better.
And Kingsley's back.
And Kingsley's obviously back. Like, I think the offensive line is stacked and is P5 ready today. running back stacked. Even if it's not stacked, it's P5 ready. Like if a leading power five, it's Colorado, but like if the leading rusher from a power five team is coming into your RB2, that's a pretty good situation to be in. And then behind him, I still feel really good about Rapati, Nukulevi Helu, Miles Davis, obviously. Like there's still a lot of guys in that running back room. If anyone goes down, I feel good about whoever comes in.
I just want to point out the using the P5 moniker and assuming it means good. No, like the one thing that Joe criticizes Utah fans for more than anything.
For sure. But like,
Like Colorado.
They're bad.
It's different, Hunter.
But again, he's running behind Colorado's offensive line.
Yeah,
against like Utah's defensive front, against Oregon's defensive front, Washington's defensive front. Like,
I think he's a really good depth piece. I'm not going to expect anything crazy. Like, he had a subpar season at an incredibly subpar team. Some of that may be his fault. Some of it might not be. Like, but to your point, I think anytime you can get, like, obviously he had to be talented to get a P5 offer to begin with. So that talent is there. I'm just not gonna like hold my breath and be like, oh, he's like, if Aiden goes down, I'm probably a little more worried than you sound like you might be.
Yeah, I mean, have you watched this film at all? Like any of his highlights from Colorado? Yeah, here and there. He's a faster, to me, he's a faster Lupini. Like very similar style, shifty out of the backfield, good in the receiving game. But I think
I mean, if he could be a receiving threat, great. But I'm also kind of like, Miles is a receiving threat.
Right, but like that's what he's being brought in to do, is to be that receiving threat, to be a change of pace from Aiden Robbins, who's going to be more of like a bruiser. I'm trying to think, like he's more of a Derrick Henry type.
Tyler Allgeier.
I don't know. He's bigger than Tyler, though. I guess like the running style is probably similar.
Tyler was a between the tackles runner.
Yeah, Tyler was just such a patient guy. I need to see that. I need to see Aiden play a little bit more, but Aiden's definitely more of like a physical run you over type guy versus a.
Yeah, and he's big, dude. Like when we went to dinner with him a couple of weeks ago, like he's like as big as us. And I'm like, dang, I'm like 6'4", like 230. This guy is freaking my same size.
But yeah, like, I don't know. Which position group are you most worried about on offense at? Like post transfer portal, who are you most worried about?
On offense?
Yeah.
Probably quarterback.
Yeah, probably right.
And I'm probably in the minority. I don't know. But like, here's the thing. Like I have, like, I'm optimistic, but it's like Keaton Slovis, there was mixed stuff in spring ball, right? Like some people were like, he's really good. Like he looks sharp. Like the talent is there. Other people were like, well, he missed some throws, missed some reads. Like that can be excused based off of the fact that it's his first time playing in a new system with a new offensive coordinator, new school, new teammates, all that, right? Like that will force like errant throws, errant reads during the course of spring practice. That's all fine and well. But like, I don't know, like the last two seasons of him playing weren't necessarily that great. His Pitt season was very not great. If he gets hurt, then it's like, well, now where are we? Like as much as I like Jake and, you know, we will sell out for anyone that comes on the podcast. Like, I don't know if Jake or Nick Billups or Cade Fennigan, like if those guys are taking snaps, that's not good. So I would just for that sheer fact of like, I don't know which Keaton Slovis to expect. I don't know if we're going to get Pitt Keaton Slovis. I don't know if we're going to get freshman year USC Keaton Slovis / high school Keaton Slovis or anywhere in between. It's just the unknown with Keaton. And then also the injury factor where it's like, if he rolls an ankle, then where does that put BYU? So I do say quarterback, but I have I'm confident in him and I'm optimistic for him, but that's probably just my biggest question mark. Cause I think there's a lot more gray area there than there is any other position group.
Yeah. I'm also willing to say that like my expectations for Keaton Slovis, like as we progress farther into this, my expectations for him are a little bit lower than most probably. Like, I think one thing we can expect is he's going to turn the ball over more than we're used to. Like the last three seasons, BYU quarterbacks have thrown a total of 14 at least BYU starters have thrown a total of 14 interceptions. And I'm pretty sure like 20, that might be like even with Baylor Romney included from 2021.
You'll probably
I don't think 14, he threw any picks.
Probably get 14 this year.
Right. But like, Zach threw 3, Jaron threw 5 in 2021, 6 in 2022. Like that is elite level. And like the touchdown and just those three quarterbacks or like the past three seasons, the two like day one starters threw for 85 touchdowns and 14 interceptions. Like that is like elite level quarterback play that if that's what we're expecting, I think we're probably going to be disappointed in the quarterback play this year.
In 2020, Zach had 3 picks on how many attempts?
Good question.
A lot.
If you have it in front of you. I have Keaton's stats in front of me, but because like Keaton has thrown
336 pass attempts.
Okay, so Keaton had 9 interceptions on 315 pass attempts this last year for Pitt. It's like 9's not a ton, Like anytime I think
nine is
sub,
nine is five, it's the 11 touchdowns that make you nervous.
10 touchdowns. I wish it was 11.
Like if he threw 30 touchdowns to
and nine picks, you'd be like, you're sick. Yeah.
So then that's great. But I'm willing to give Keaton a pass on Pitt because he was signing up for a system initially that like Kenny Pickett ran. They went to the Peach Bowl, and then Pat Narduzzi the next season says, you know what we need to do? We need to run the ball more, even though I just had a Heisman finalist as my quarterback and just took Pitt to a freaking New Year's Six game. He says, no, we need to run the ball more. And so he brings in this offensive coordinator after Jordan Addison leaves and then after Keaton Slovis comes in, and now Slovis is playing in a system that he didn't sign up for and that doesn't fit his skill set. So, like, I'm willing to give him a pass on Pitt. What's concerning to me is that Keaton got worse every single year at USC.
Yeah, freshman year, Keaton, 72% completion percentage, 3,500 yards, 30 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. Sophomore year at USC, 67% completion percentage, hair under 2,000 passing yards, 17 touchdowns, 7 interceptions.
COVID year, though, right?
Yeah, that was COVID year. So he played 6 games.
Which isn't bad for 6 games.
Not bad for 6 games. Next year, played 9 games for USC in 2021. That's when Jackson Dart took over at the end. 65% completion percentage, 21,500 yards, or 2,150. Yeah. 11 touchdowns, 8 interceptions. And then this last year, 58% completion, 2,400 yards, 9 interceptions, 10 touchdowns.
So, like, if history's
regression every year,
but like, if history's any indication, I think Keaton is still the quarterback he was at USC. So, I think we can expect 65% completion percentage, pushing 3,000 yards. But it's that touchdown to interception ratio that I worry about.
Yeah, I mean,
does BYU have that threat who can get like? Is Isaac Rex going to be that guy this year to be that red zone threat?
Or is it like Cody any Epps. Of their wide receivers? Yeah, Cody Epps, Keanu Hill. I was trying to think of the new UConn guy's name.
But who is going to, like, again, it's all those stats I actually don't have a huge problem with. It's just like the significant decrease in touchdowns.
Going from 30 to 17 to 11 to 10 is a rough.
It was more like, I mean, let's double the 2020 stats just because he played 6 games. So, like, if you extrapolate that over a full season, he's looking at, what, 34 touchdowns?
Yeah, but then 15 interceptions.
34. I mean, would you take 34 touchdowns, 15 interceptions? Like, if today I told you Keaton was going to complete 65% of his passes for nearly 4,000 yards, 34 touchdowns, 15 picks, would you take that?
Compared to what else BYU has, yeah. Like, compared to what I think Cade Finnegan gives me, yes.
Like, I think I would take that. Like, if well, tomorrow, yeah. I mean, that's what I could sign up for.
It'd be a wild ride. Could five of them come in, like, one game? Like, can I just be like, sure, Arkansas is going to be an L, just throw 5 picks that game.
But, like, 15 picks is, again, we're basing this on, like, Jaren Hall and Zach Wilson, who, like, the last 3 years have been absolutely elite in terms of taking care of the football. It's like, that's what we're used to. But, like, Zach Wilson, before he became, like, him in 2020, he threw, like, 9 picks in 2019 in 9 games. So, like, that's normal. Like, 1 pick a game is normal for a college quarterback. We just have to, like, I think we just have to.
Yeah, but you don't want it to be.
How much can we bank on Keaton being affected by A-Rod though? Like, that's like, I know obviously, like, Jaren and Zach, special players, special talent, but there is an offensive coordinator down there in Provo that's done a very good job of scheming his guys open. And Jaren mentioned it all the time, and it seems like every time A-Rod is in an interview, he brings up ball security. Like, how much of that do you think can, like, positively affect Keaton? I mean, obviously we don't want to change his quarterback style completely. I mean, a lot of his success comes from being slightly over aggressive, but in an event like this one, where he's coming into a system that's actually formulated towards his skill set and with an emphasis on protecting the ball. I feel like, I'm not saying there's going to be a huge drop off in interceptions, but I feel like we could see at least a positive moving of the meter when it comes to, you know, how many like interception worthy passes, for example, Keaton takes in the game.
I think that's a good point.
15 interceptions is a lot. I'm just gonna say it. Like, I'm scrolling through here, like guys who this last year threw for more than like 30 touchdowns. Like, obviously it's an outlier because it's Caleb Williams and he might be the best quarterback I've ever seen in person. Threw 42 touchdowns and 5 picks. Like, that's insane.
That's obviously his Heisman level.
Yes, but 15 is a lot. Like, anyone who was over, like, I'm clicking through, and like the most interceptions for a quarterback so far that I've come across who had over 35 passing touchdowns this last season, the most interceptions that they had was 11. And that was so Sam Hartman at Wake Forest.
What's the most interceptions Keaton has thrown in his career?
9 this last year and his freshman year. Here's my question for you. If we see a return for Keaton Slovis to freshman year production, so that's 3,500 yards, 30 touchdowns, and let's say 10 interceptions.
I take it tomorrow.
I know you would take it, but if that is indeed, if he finishes his stat line with that, that as a stat line this season, A, what is BYU's record? And B, when does Keaton Slovis get drafted? Throw the predictions out there. Keaton Slovis finishes with 3,500 yards, 70% completion, 30 touchdowns, 10 interceptions. What's BYU's record?
I know I'm like going against my take here because I predicted BYU would win 9 games this year. I'm going to say conservatively, I think if that's his stat line, and what's Aiden Robbins doing? Like, is Keaton doing this because our running game sucks, or
doesn't matter? Just that's his stat line.
I'm gonna say they win 8 games.
Okay.
I'm gonna say they win 8 games, they go 8-4, chance for 9 in a bowl game, and then Keaton goes in like the 4th round.
Okay. Yeah, I was gonna say pushing 9, very similar. I put him in the 3rd. It's just, man, I'm not gonna lie, that freshman year stat line scares me a little bit because I just look at Pitt, like his worst year and his best year, and his best year he had Drake London, like Michael Pittman Jr., like all these guys. I just this is where my faith in A-Rod comes in, where it's like, can he, like, is he really as good as he's appeared to be with these last like several quarterbacks? Because like that stat line would be awesome, but like, I don't know if we currently have a Drake London or a Michael Pittman Jr. or even like, I can't even remember his name, like Tyler Vaughn or whatever.
We have a Cody Epps and a Keanu Hill.
True.
Is BYU's receiving room, is it closer to that USC receiving room? Is it closer to Pitt?
Oh, it's definitely closer to USC's.
What do you think, Hunter?
I think it's closer to USC's. Yeah.
I mean, I think so, but like Pitt's? we're also
But it's not better than.
Yeah, but like wide receiver room is terrible.
Pitt had one of the highest drop rates in the country. Like, if you look at Keaton's catchable ball, like his catchable ball percentage last year was about the same as Jarrett's. Like, it wasn't like that Keaton Slovis that we knew just like died. It was literally like the receiving room just didn't get it done. So I think it's a little bit of both, right? Like,
if you want to know a fun fact, if you took away Keaton's freshman year, if you took away the BYU game and the Oregon game, he finished 25 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. He threw 3 picks against BYU, and he threw 3 picks against 12.
That's not Eliza Tuiaki defense right there.
over half his interceptions. Elite. Those 2 games.
Drop 8 every play.
That's a question we need to be asking, is how concerned are we if a team decides to drop 8? You think he's figured it out?
Oh, we're ruined.
I think he's – I think he's better. I'm with you. I think like it all just is. It's how the offense looks this year is just gonna go as far as Keaton takes him. I think. Like I think it's a decent situation because you got a great running back in Aiden Robbins. Again, you have a very deep running back room. You have a very deep offensive line. Yeah. Receiving room is probably the position. I don't know if I feel more nervous about the receiving room or the tight ends. I probably feel more nervous about the tight ends.
They haven't used tight ends since Zach.
Right. But I mean, Jaren just didn't throw over the middle of the field. I think Keaton is more likely to throw it over the middle of the field.
Yeah. But Jaren, I feel like they can run their offense without like a bona fide tight end receiving
throw. For sure. But like, I think like our second best tight end right now is probably Hunter Erickson and Jackson.
The Mason Wake disrespect right now.
I look at Mason Wake as a fullback.
Smokes, dude.
Look, until I see Mason Wake catch Mason a ball 25 yards downfield, you said that. He's a fullback. Mason would tell you he's a fullback.
Mason's going to be heartbroken. I don't want to send this text, but I have to.
No other choice. But like maybe Jackson Bowers comes in and is just like a dude, but he's also 18 years old. And so
why not though? You know, why not?
But again, like
show me the downside. Show me the downside. If Isaac Rex gets hurt of like,
I think Jackson Bowers can come in tomorrow and compete.
Yeah. Do it.
He's a dog.
Yeah. Defensively.
Yeah. Let's flip over to defense. Where does BYU finish with the transfer portal additions? Where does BYU finish in the nation in total defense this year?
36.
30, top 40.
I don't know. I'm just throwing the numbers out. How many teams are there?
If BYU is top 60, I will be over the moon.
Where were they this last year?
Like 98th.
Whatever they were this last year, cut it in half, and that's my number. I think they'll be twice as good.
They were about 97th.
If I remember right. I think that's a good rule of thumb.
Mugging it up.
I think like if for no other reason than just the scheme. Like I think we're gonna see a lot more big plays given up this year. Maybe not. Like BYU was giving up big plays last year too. It was hard and break.
Are you talking like yards per game?
Points yards per game.
Yards per game, okay. BYU, this says BYU is 44th, so 22nd.
No,
there's no way. There was no way they were 44th.
Oh, that was most yards per game. There was only 21 teams worse than them.
Nice.
filtered it wrong. This isn't making any sense. Where are we at? Some time. They're not even showing up on this list. They're so far off the list.
It was that bad. No, but you were talking about the big plays, Joe. I think the big key is like the scheme. The scheme, obviously, it's a little bit more aggressive, so it certainly opens itself up more to big plays. My biggest question is do we have guys that have enough speed to be able to get home? Because like the big plays come when the blitz gets picked up and you know,
I'm an idiot.
Cornered bites on a double move or whatever the case may be there. If you have guys screaming in the face of whoever the quarterback is, like he's not completing a bomb downfield. So I think that's my biggest question mark. It's not a positional question mark. It's a speed thing. Like as we move to consistently playing Power 5 teams, like, do we have the speed to be able to play not only sideline to sideline, but if we're going to be aggressive, like, to get home? Because that's what's going to matter.
I think it depends on – I guess it depends on who's on the field. I don't think BYU has the speed depth that they need to consistently do that the whole year. I think a guy like Harrison Taggart helps. I think he ran, a sub-1100? Like a 10-7 something.
Yeah.
In high school, which is nuts. Which, granted, he's probably 30 pounds heavier now than he was when he ran that.
And half a second faster. 86 was the answer, by the way. So I'm going to say 40.
So like one of my hot takes this season is I think Harrison Taggart cracks the starting rotation by week 5. I think he's that.
Who starts over him?
Right now, it's probably Tui or Bywater.
I mean, you have Ben, AJ, and Max.
But I think like BYU is going to play a ton of nickel this year. I think we're going to see BYU in a lot more two linebacker sets than we're probably used to, because they want that sideline to sideline. And I think Harrison Taggart gives you the flexibility to be able to do that, because he's got the size, he's got the speed. So I think by the time we're like in the meat of Big 12 play, I think he's going to be that guy. I think Max Tooley is probably quick enough to do that. I haven't seen AJ Vonfichon enough. I mean, Ben Bywater had a pick 6 this year, so
Max had a few.
Who knows? I just like, there are just so many question marks on this defense, and like all these guys like on this defense, I feel like I've been watching for the last 4 years, but I still have no idea what it's going to look like this year, because they have real coaches this year they're going to have a full off season with coaches who actually know what they're doing, who are going to develop and coach and get these and put a scheme in place that fits these guys' strengths.
That's so, your dog.
Yeah.
You like positive, like thinking that was my dog or something.
I do find it interesting. I feel like offensively and defensively, we have this, at least in my head, this kind of interesting little scenario where on the offensive end, it's at quarterback, we obviously addressed Keaton at length. We have a system that I have a lot of, there's like no question marks. We've had so much success. Just offensively over the last several years with a quarterback that I'm just like, well, haven't seen him in this type of scenario before. So like the system's good, but we'll see with him. And then on the flip side, I feel like we brought in a lot of transfers that I'm like, okay, these guys actually are really good. And then the question mark isn't, I'm not questioning Jay Hill per se. It's just, does the scheme work? Like, does it work with the guys that we have? And so it's just funny to see that little dynamic on each end with a proven system on one side and a system that theoretically should work. But until rubber hits the road and they put the pads on, it's like, how are we to know?
And that's fair. But I also think that's a reality for like every college football team, right? Like,
sure. No, totally.
It's all talk until week 0 or week 1, whenever your teammates are playing. You're still muted, Joe. So, but like, all you can do is look back on like what Jay Hill has done and what these players have done. And like, I think it bodes extremely well for what BYU is going to try to do on defense this year. Granted, will it work immediately? Will it work against the level of talent that the Big 12 is going to bring? Will it work, you know, against an offense like TCU or Oklahoma? Like, who knows, right? Like, I think that's what's really untested. Like, I don't think there's any doubt that Jay Hill's scheme does work and that these players are talented because they've shown it on the field before. It's just how talented or how well does it work when you're going up against, you know, teams and athletes that these guys have never gone up against.
Sure. So kind of going along that line, like, I guess we can address this even closer as it, you know, gets closer to the season, but like, just like early off the dome, we obviously play two very lackluster teams to open up the year, Sam Houston State and SEU. Like, is there, and if there is, what do you look for to kind of put into, like, to give value to a defense, like, in the scheme? Like, what do you look for that you can say after those 2 weeks? Like, okay, yeah, the defense is better.
Stops. Like, just 100%. How many drives are fewer than 6 plays?
I like that.
I'd also say takeaways.
That's a good one.
Like, I think that's, I mean, kind of that, – yeah. That's like a department that BYU defense, like, with the exception of those couple of pick sixes for Max this last year, like, BYU hasn't really been, like, a takeaway kind of defense.
Well, last year they struggled. The years before that, though, I mean, BYU's linebackers, I think, like, led the nation in picks.
But that's bad for the second. Like, your linebackers shouldn't be leading your team.
I mean, our secondary, candidly, our secondary hasn't been good enough. Like, yeah.
Which
at
is
least not a
question I had to bring up, but I'll wait on it. But I think, like, if you can come out of those two games with, like, 3-4 takeaways, like, coupled with what Joe said, like, stops. Like, how many 3-and-outs did you force? How many drives were less than 6 plays? Like, I think that's crucial.
But it's like, I want to see if takeaways is the indicator, I want to see legit takeaways rather than just giveaways, right? Like, Sam Houston State does not have a good offense. Like, yeah. It would not surprise me at all if their quarterback comes out and just throws, like, lame ducks all over the field.
But I also think that, like, Jay Hill came in his press conference and in subsequent interviews he's done, he's talked about an aggressive defense, right? Well, like, show me now that defense is going to be aggressive and corners taking chances to get picks rather than playing it safe and just trying to make the tackle when it's inevitably caught. But show me defensive linemen and linebackers, like, trying to strip the ball from the ball carrier. Like, and especially for those two teams, like, those are two games where you can take risks, where you can play aggressive, where Micah Harper can come down as a safety and try to make a leaping interception rather than just playing it safe, waiting for, you know, to see if a catch is made and then making a tackle. Like, I want to see the aggressive ball hawk kind of style of defense in those two games. But I think first and foremost, what you said is correct.
So how many?
In addition to, I want to see some fumble recoveries, and I want to see some picks.
So I forgot the stats from last year, but, like, wasn't against, like, Liberty, Arkansas, Notre Dame, like, that awful stretch in October, the defense, I think, gave up, like, 8 or 9 drives a game of 10 plays or more, right?
Oh my god!
Or was that just like how it felt?
No, that's exactly right. I had the numbers written down.
It's horrible.
Let me look.
So what I want to see is, between the two games, I want to see 14 total drives of fewer than 6 plays.
That's high. 14.
Or maybe fewer than 10.
I was going to say less than 10 for sure.
But, like, three
that'd
first downs.
That'd be 7 a game. That's like,
but that's 3 first downs.
But that's what Notre Dame was doing.
Right. Like, if they can't hold Sam Houston State,
but I'm saying that shouldn't be the standard.
No, but I think, like, coming out of Sam Houston State and who's the SUU?
Yeah, Southern Utah.
Like, coming out of those two games, I'd hope that there's at least 10 drives of fewer than 6 plays.
Oh, you're saying 14. Okay. You said less than 14 drives of 6.
Sorry, I said 14 drives or more. So I want
less than. I thought you were saying
14 drives or more of less than 6 plays. Like, assuming that.
Okay. Assuming you're saying 10 drives where you're like, I thought you were saying BYU should hold them to 14 or less drives of 6 or more plays. I'm like, that's Notre Dame, Arkansas numbers.
Yeah, no. So, that's what I want to see is, like, what they've been preaching all offseason is, like, get off the field early. And that's what I want to see. Because, like, BYU's offense last year, I, like, looked at the numbers. BYU, the last 3 seasons, has been top 15 in terms of yards per play every single year. And they've also been top 20 in points per play. But when you look at, like, the total points per game and, like, total yards metrics, BYU has been, like, kind of a mid-tier offense. But, like, in terms of efficiency, BYU's been right there. They just haven't had the plays to be able to do it. And it's, like, to operate at, like, a top 20 level in, summation. I'm totally blanking on the word.
I like summation.
That's a good one.
But, like, I want to see, like, there's no doubt in my mind, I think this offense can operate at a top 20 pay, like a top 20 trend in terms of efficiency. It's more of, like, can the defense get off the field? So I want to see 14 total drives or more, a fewer than 6 plays. I think I want to see, is 6 sacks too many?
No.
Over 3 games? No.
2 games.
I think 6 sacks. 2 games. And let's go with 3 takeaways.
Yeah.
I think if that's what you come out of it, I think BYU wins both those games by 20 plus, and we're feeling pretty good going into Arkansas.
This is off topic. What a nice little change it is to be like, hey, let's use the first two games of the season to like get right.
Yes.
Like, could you imagine going into a situation like this where you're like, all right, game one on the road against Tennessee, game two, we're at home versus Texas. Then we're flying across country to go play Florida State. Like, that's kind of what the schedule has been like. It's so nice to be like, all right, what do we want to see from these two FCF games to start the year that's going to give you confidence going into the real games later on? It's a nice little change of pace here.
Yeah. Well, like that one year we added like Portland State or whatever to get ready for LSU. Like, how nice was that? Well, it would have been nice. Left that game. Left that game feeling absolutely horrendous, and we know how the rest of that season went.
Helped me realize the only thing that I learned from that game was that BYU was in for a rough year. Rough year.
But
and they were.
The point being is that I felt like that game on paper should have helped.
Now, on paper, yeah. If they had a good team.
Yes, the team.
Theoretically.
The team failed their end of the bargain there. But to be able to have two games back-to-back, to be able to kind of tinker. You could do some lineup things in there too. If there's, you know, certain positions that you're not sure about, you can put guys in there and maybe sub a little bit more than you would. Not only to get playing time for all these guys, but to, you know, hopefully preserve people's legs and health for later games. I mean, there's just so many benefits that, like you've alluded to, obviously, Hunter, we just haven't had. I mean, all those tune-up games were like the last two of the season in Independence, and now they're the first two.
Yeah. I mean, the NFL has a preseason for a reason, right?
Like, right.
Three games. Part of it is to make cuts, but the other part is to make sure, you know, your guys know where they're supposed to be, who's in what packages, iron out all the wrinkles. These two games are the de facto preseason games for BYU. Like, these are two games that you should win. Shouldn't really sweat it all that much. Get guys reps who might not otherwise get reps, but more importantly, iron out the kinks. Make sure, you know, there's no weird hiccups or lasting issues as you get into the real meat of the season. So,
you know, the one thing that I just occurred to me that I want to see, you guys threw out some actual numbers. I want to see at least one time against Sam Houston State or SU or both where the camera just pans over and Jay Hill is just chewing somebody out on the sideline. Like they just had a three and out, but somebody.
I hope that happens zero times, Trevor, because I want everyone to just play perfectly.
I want to see it from an accountability standpoint. I mean, I think that's something that we've preached for years. And I just think when you're playing against a nobody and somebody blows their assignment and yet Jay Hill's still ready in that moment to be able to like kind of get in their face a little bit so it doesn't happen later. I'd like to see that.
Yeah, I'm with you, Trevor.
Yeah, just literally any emotion at all.
Right.
My standards are low.
Just, yeah, some semblance of caring. Be a nice little touch. Quick question for you while we're on the defense. Jacob Robinson at corner, Jaden Dunlap backing him up, Micah Harper at strong safety, Malik Moore at free safety, Eddie Heckard at corner with Camden Garrett backing him up. Is the best BYU secondary group in the last blank amount of years?
I feel like we do this every single year. And maybe it's because the secondary is improved
pretty much every single year. But this legitimately feels like could be, I'm not going to say is because we haven't seen it on the field, but could be one of the better secondaries that BYU's had in the last 30 years.
I mean, not to throw shade at your old boss, but like we've come a long way since the days of Ben Criddle and Craig Bills playing corner, haven't we?
Well,
yes. BYU won a lot of games those years.
That's true.
Yeah. I was going to ask, how long ago was Andrew Rich like Brandon Bradley, Brian Logan?
I mean, that was 2009, 2010.
I mean, they were pretty good.
Brandon Bradley, Brian Logan is a good one.
I don't know. Like, I mean, Gennaro, the days of Michael Davis and Diane Lake were also pretty darn good.
Michael Davis didn't even play.
Daniel Sorensen.
Michael Davis didn't play, though. Like, he was regarded as a bad corner at BYU. Like, he got benched.
I think just the tandem of Jacob Robinson and Eddie Heckard, I think that tandem is probably the two most, like, the two best corners BYU's had since, like, Tim McTyre. And why am I blanking on the name of the guy who played opposite Tim McTyre? BYU had two NFL cornerbacks in the late 90s on the same roster.
Derwin Gray?
No, Derwin Gray was like early 90s. Regardless, I think it's probably the best tandem since the 90s.
Okay.
Is that extreme?
Did BYU – it's going to sound funny. Did BYU have a white guy starting the secondary any of the last couple of years?
Depends which game.
Because we were looking at Ethan Slade back there.
That's
true. This might be the first group of like starting safeties, and then two deep at either corner that like didn't have like some walk on white kid.
Yeah, I mean, it's
come a long way, boys.
Like when we started the show, I was sitting here thinking, okay, I think probably cornerback is the weakest room that we have on defense. But, like, I've talked myself into maybe it being the best.
I mean, Jacob, we know what Jacob brings.
I completely forgot about Jacob Robinson, to be candid. But, like, Jacob Robinson is a baller. Like, he's awesome. Yeah. Eddie Heckard is going to be awesome at nickel.
People were talking about Eddie being the best corner in the state last year that had Jacob Robinson and Brian Phillips.
I think Eddie Heckard is a top 10 player in the state of Utah this year. FCS first team All American, 4-star transfer at the FCS level, which is like crazy.
Yep.
And then you got Camden Garrett, who is also an I think he was like second team All Big Sky, which, like, if you're all conference at the FCS level, I think you could probably play at the Power Five level. Or at least
Raider.
Raider will be interesting too.
Raider back.
But who would be the, like, Mori Bamba would probably be the one backing up Jacob?
No, Jaden Dunlap.
So Jaden Dunlap, who's after Jaden?
Then Mo Bamba.
Mori Bamba.
That's what at least our lads has for their depth chart. On left corner, right corner is Eddie, Camden Garrett, and then Marcus McKenzie. So it gets a little thinner after.
Marcus McKenzie is fast.
Yeah, I mean, it gets thin after Camden Garrett because Marcus is a freshman, but he's still a talented freshman.
But, like, give me a two deep. Like, that is your two deep I'm fine with. And then at safety, I feel really confident in our safety room.
Malik has the injury history, right? Like, he missed a big chunk of last year because he broke his hand.
I think Raider DeMooney makes a huge – like, Micah Harper's awesome, and then I think Raider DeMooney makes a huge difference.
I mean, look – We're a big Ethan Slade podcast, right? I like to think so.
Talon Alfrey. Big Talon Alfrey guy.
Ethan Slade right now, who was getting like crunch time reps last season, like end of games was in there, is currently slotted as the fourth string safety on this year's team.
That's pretty good.
It's pretty good. That's an improvement in the depth of a position where BYU needs playmakers. Especially now going, like, I think more than anything, you need solid corners defensively to compete, like, in the Big 12. Like, jumping up from independence to now. Like, look at, like, I know he's not there anymore, but that TCU receiver, who's just straight mossing everybody.
Okay. Johnston, like,
receivers are bigger, faster, stronger, and can jump higher than any receivers BYU's played.
Yeah, we're lucky, Hunter, that we're missing out on Quentin Johnston, freaking Marvin Mims, Tank Dell, like all these guys.
But that's the thing about Big 12 football is that those guys are gone and you just have new guys.
Right.
That are like stepping in to replace them. Like nobody, like without blinking an eye.
I mean, like, it's so funny. I think in most of our heads, we think like, oh, Big 12 is like all world. But like BYU literally beat Baylor last year. Like,
yeah, but it was a bad Baylor team.
I mean, they won 6-6, 7-5.
I think they were like 6-6, weren't they?
I mean, bad is relative. I think they were like a mid-tier Big 12 team.
They were a not great Big 12 team.
Yeah, not elite for sure. But like
you have Texas, Oklahoma, TCU, Texas Tech.
If that BYU defense can hold a Big 12 offense to like 20 points, like I feel like I need to be a little bit higher on this defense than I am.
Kansas State.
But like
they were 6-7. They lost 30-15 in the Armed Forces Bowl against Air Force. It was a bad Baylor team. I need to see where they rank offensively.
They definitely got worse as the season went on. They were.
Legit. I mean, you have TCU, Kansas State.
I'm
Texas
dying Tech. On this hill. They were a legit top 10 team when they came to Provo, and BYU just snatched their soul.
I mean,
that's what I say about Oklahoma. They hurt Sam Bradford. They were going to the national championship, and then Sam Bradford got hurt, and of course they.
But
you want me to look up this total?
I guess my point here is that BYU isn't as far behind as we think.
I mean, we've been there offensively for several years now.
Last year they would have been.
But I mean, I'm talking about this year. Like with the infusion of talent, I think this BYU team is in a better this BYU team is going to be far and away a better defense than it was last year.
Absolutely. I agree with you there, but what I'm saying is like it's because of the addition. Baylor was 71st in the country last year in passing yards per game, just over 200.
Are saying they want Jeff Grimes back.
Less than Pitt, just behind Toledo and Troy, and Arkansas State and Ball State and Rice and Buffalo.
Man, I wish BYU was playing Baylor again this year.
Just ahead of Tulane, though. Cotton Bowl champs, Tulane Green Wave. So I guess that's worth something.
Are we in agreement that probably the position group I'm most nervous about still is the defensive line?
Yeah. But I think it's not because they're going to be bad, but just because I'm so confident in their linebackers and their corners.
I'm going to need to see it from this defensive line. Like, I'm pretty high, like, everywhere else on BYU's defense. At least, like, the top line, I'm feeling pretty good. But, like, I think Tyler Batty is going to show a lot better than he has the last few years because he's not just going to be like a block eater like he has been. He's going to have an opportunity to be a legitimate pass rusher. We just need him to learn how to go low on a quarterback who can squat 500 pounds. Yep. But everyone else on the defensive line, I have no confidence. Like that includes like Isaiah Banya and Jackson Cravens. Like I'm going to need to see it.
Let me rattle off the two deep for you across the defense line, and then you give me your – then grade it. 1 to 10, confidence level. 10 being this is Clemson's defensive line. 1 being we're going to – other teams are going to run for 300 yards a game. Okay? Left defensive end, Tyler Batty. His backup is Blake Mangelson. Nose tackle, you have Atunai Samahe. Behind him, you have Jackson Cravens. Defensive tackle, John Nelson. Behind him, you have Caden Hawes. Right defensive end, you have Isaiah Banya. Behind him, Ice Moa.
Honestly, like a 4.
A 4?
I'd go 6.
I was going to say, I read that and I was kind of like, okay, maybe like a 7.
No, like Tyler Batty is the only guy that I might be approaching like a 6 or a 7.
Isaiah Banya, like those are guys. Like those.
I've watched Atunai Samahe. No disrespect to Atunai Samahe and John Nelson, but I've watched them just get blown off the football against some very weak offensive lines. And maybe that's the scheme, but I haven't seen it. Like I'm hearing from sources that like Blake Mangelson, I don't know if I should say this. If this is where we play like whole sources. Music, this is where we play it. Coaches are very high on Blake Mangelson. They think Blake Mangelson is I would say one of BYU's top 2-3 defensive ends over certain highly rated recruits. And like, if that's the case, Blake Mangelsohn is a walk-on. Like, if that's the case, then I just like, I can't get excited. Cause like, I don't think I've ever seen Blake Mangelsohn make a play. He's been at BYU now for what, 2-3 years. And I'm not sure I've ever heard his name called.
He's a junior this year. Here's what it was last year. Gabe Summers, Tyler Batty, Earl Tuioti Mariner, Ajani Samaje.
Like those are feel like, was it Caleb Hawes?
Caden Hawes.
Caden Hawes. I just feel like him, John Nelson, and Gabe Summers are all just like the same player in my mind. Like they all look exactly the same. They have numbers between like 90 and 99. Like,
I think by far the defensive line is the biggest question mark, like of any position group, not kicker.
I mean, and again, like that's probably all just coaching and it's all scheme. Like I reserve the right to change my mind after I see BYU the first couple weeks of the season. But the entire defense to me at this point, I'm just kind of in prove it mode. Like they could be a top 30 defense.
100%.
And I would not be surprised in the least. They could be a top. They could be like a bottom 30 defense, and I also wouldn't be surprised.
But June 21st isn't the time for the rational, like, they got to prove it talk. Like, June 21st is when you got to look at it and be like, Caden Hawes, dog. Tyler Batty, dog. Isaiah Bond, dog.
I'm trying to keep it measured. I'm trying to keep our credibility here.
That's what
but
we
then again, Derek doing. Derek does not care about our credibility.
Yeah, he just he's wants the one to listening listen to this.
Say nice thing about
that's him. What we do in August. Right. And then at the end, we push it aside and we're like, but who cares? BYU 14-0, Big 12 champs, circle the wagons, friggin' get the shovel the coal into the engine, baby. Let's get this hype train rolling. But like in June, you gotta look at the upside of guys because there's nothing else to do in June but look at the upside of guys. We spent the first 10 minutes of this podcast being like, I don't know what happened the last month, what's gonna happen the next month, nothing.
Yeah, I just kind of need to, again,
just look at the upside. It's
the defensive line only, like every other position group, I'm willing to like shovel coal.
Yeah.
But like, I'll
shovel coal myself for freaking Caden Hawes and Jackson. However, Harris, all right.
However,
me and the big dogs.
Your homework is to go back and watch the spring game and just watch Eddie Heckard.
Oh, it's on a freaking summer break. Give me homework. The heck?
We all need things to do during the day. No, like go and watch. Just watch Eddie Heckard and Jacob Robinson play. Those dudes are so good.
Dude,
like Eddie Heckard, like Keanu Hill is a really good receiver. Okay, and Eddie Heckard clamped Keanu Hill the entire time in one-on-one coverage.
I think I've tweeted it. There's nothing I love more in football than just a freaking lockdown corner, dude. No,
Eddie Heckard.
It's the hardest position in football.
Like, I am willing, like, you want shoveling coal. You want shoveling coal. Eddie Heckard will be drafted in the same range as Clark Phillips.
Which was what, third, fourth round?
Fourth round.
Is that what he was? I mean, you saw how hyped I was in the NFL draft when the Patriots picked Christian Gonzalez. I freaking love a good corner. Like, I'll get up for a good corner more than I would, like, a sick wide receiver.
But, like, they're similar size players. I mean, Eddie Heckard can't be more than, what, 5'9"?
5'10". So like, he's small, dude.
5'10", 190.
I mean, he's a thick dude. No, but he lays the wood. That dude hits. He's aggressive.
He's strong. That boy's strong.
He's a ball hawk.
Did you say 5'10", Trevor?
5'10", 190.
He's not 5'10".
Not a chance.
Let's go
to the chance.
Looking at 24/7.
Let's go to the Ruby River.
Me and him sat next to each other in the booth. Eddie, you know you're my guy. That guy is not taller than 5'8".
But he plays like a dog.
He plays Eddie Heckard, dog. But he's short. He's short.
He's so good.
He's got sick Tesla though. Shout out. He loves it.
Yes. NIL, gotta love it.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't know. We need to ask Jake how tall Eddie really is.
Do we dare cover special teams?
Punter, sick. Ryan Rico, Uncle Rico.
Field goal kicker. Let's just hope he scored a touchdown every single time.
Yeah.
and go
for it. Or have Rico come out and dropkick it.
That was mean, my thought that I had that popped into my head. But when you were like field goal kicker, I was like, could it be any worse than it was last year?
Probably not. It could.
I don't know.
Special teams, I'm interested to see what a guy like Camden Garrett can do.
Do you think he's going to return kicks, or do you think they're going to still have a big
Caleb? He was one of Weber State's kick returners, wasn't he?
Yeah, but Caleb's been returning kicks for BYU for a while. And he's a senior. Caleb Christensen. Who? You know.
I like Caleb Christensen. I think Hobbs Nyberg is probably still going to be your punt returner.
Long snappers. What are we thinking? If you can name a long snapper,
His first name's Austin.
Okay.
From Alpine, Utah.
I know his name.
Just one of them. Just name one of the three. There's three on the roster.
Two of their brothers.
There's two of them are brothers, yes. But the third one is from my ward. Is from my home ward.
What are their names?
There's Austin Riggs.
Yeah,
there's Dalton Riggs. And then there's my boy Nick Harris, dude.
East High?
Nick Harris, East High, from the home ward, lives in my neighborhood. Just got engaged, I think, yesterday. So shout out to Nick. Hopefully he beats out Austin Riggs for the long snapper, starting long snapper. And that's our Liberty player by player, position by position
break. We know names.
That's the
Let's just start out. Naming players best, on the roster.
That was the best interview ever. Just sitting in with Hunter, just listening to position number one to position like 140 for Liberty. I never wanted to beat a team so bad in my life. Yep.
The worst part was they were proven correct.
Every player they named freaking kicked our butt, dude.
So painful. Let's end it on a positive note. More stuff on the recruiting trail since it's off season. Reiner Swanson committed. BYU dog. Go bash it. Go watch his highlight tape. That dude is awesome. It's fun for me. Like, I have a 24/7 subscription, Flex. If you have a 24/7 subscription, go read like other boards of players that we're pursuing. Because like I went on Texas and Oregon's board, and all of them were talking about Reiner Swanson. Like, oh yeah, we got him. Like, he's so good. Like, we got him in the bag. Maybe it's a 50-50 between us and BYU. And BYU landed him. And all of them were just like, that is a great get by BYU. So Reiner Swanson is a dog, like bona fide four-star player who, like, could come in tomorrow and compete for reps. Like, he's that good. I'm going to try
to roster this year, right?
He will not next year. So it'll be on. So it'll come for one, go on a mission, then come back. So him and Jackson Bowers will be on the roster together for a year, at least.
Little pit of Andrew George action.
I'm going to try and pronounce this right. Maya Leowaki Smith.
Borderline
four-star quarterback between BYU and Oklahoma State. He visited Oklahoma State last weekend. People seem to be saying BYU's going to land him, but, like, he's really good. So, like, if BYU can land him, I'm feeling pretty good about the quarterback situation going forward. He's not a member of the church, so no mission plans.
That was the least hype train thing you've maybe ever said.
What?
BYU, people think that BYU might be able to land him, but he's really good. So maybe not.
BYU is for sure landing him.
That was the least hyped thing. BYU thinks they could land him, but he's really good. So good day.
Oh no! That's not what I meant. I didn't mean like he's really good. So BYU might not land him.
The words out of your mouth verbatim were: BYU thinks that they are going to land him, but he's really good.
I didn't say it like that. No, he's a baller, and BYU thinks they're going to land him. So keep an eye out for that this weekend. This weekend is probably the biggest recruiting weekend BYU's had. I mean, probably since last year, but we didn't land any of those guys last year, so I'm just going to say that this is the biggest one ever. Yeah. Two borderline four-star, three-star safeties in Davis Andrews and Faletau Satuala. Cash Dillon is visiting this weekend, who's a awesome edge rusher out of Corner Canyon. This could be a huge weekend for BYU recruiting and picking up momentum going in for the 2024 class. Hopefully in the next 2 weeks, BYU will have a top 50, 40 class. But I mean, neither of you guys are big recruiting dudes, so.
I don't know.
Hey, I've been keeping tabs on that transfer rank, okay? Top 20.
We start following things once BYU's good at them. I think that's a fair assessment.
Yes.
When they get, when they step on campus. And when I see them on the practice field, that's when I'm like, okay, I'll start. I'll buy in. Unless it's like an otherworldly recruit, like Harrison Taggart. I'm like, okay, that's big. I like that. You know, if they get this quarterback, big, like that. But other than that.
No, fair. Anything else?
There's officially 9 days left of Independence West Coast Conference era.
Woo!
Nice.
So we'll probably record again next week and do a farewell episode. We kind of talked about maybe doing it this today, but then obviously we're an hour and 12 minutes into this thing. So
on our third season preview.
Yeah. How many times can we preview the football season?
I promise you guys, we're going to have this exact same conversation on August 21st. I guarantee it.
We need to do it more structured then, though. Like we do, like, what are you looking for? Record predictions, game by game. Like we do. This was a little bit more off the cuff. Like, what about this? We'll have more structured one in the future. But yeah, next week episode, I think I put it already. Build your BYU offense in the Independence era. Figure us three would take a stab at that. Maybe get Chandler in here, present our teams. We can debate them. And then also I want to talk favorite moment from the Independence and West Coast Conference era. So I got 8 good ones. And then if you have any other ones you want to throw out, we'll talk about that. Because it is last 13 years of BYU sports and Independence and in the West Coast Conference are coming to an end in 9 short days. So we'll mourn a New Orleans funeral for the West Coast Conference Independence era. And then on to the Big 12.
Let's close with this. While we were away, Marcus Smart traded.
What?
To the Memphis Grizzlies.
Oh, my gosh.
Had to replace Dylan Brooks.
They almost got Porzingis. Are you actual right now?
I mean, it was Woj who traded it.
You're messing. Oh, gosh. Why? Okay. I don't like that.
We'll talk Celtics, offline.
Celtics receive Kristaps Porzingis, the number 23rd pick this year, and a first-round pick next year. Grizzlies receive Marcus Smart. Wizards receive Tyus Jones.
Do the Wizards
what are you
care
doing,
about
dude?
Basketball?
Oh, yeah, Wizards.
They're the Wizards of crap trades.
You gave up Kristaps Porzingis for Tyus Jones? That's actually a big Celtics W. I like that. That's good. I'm sad.
Who did the Wizards? The Wizards also gave Bradley Beal away for free, basically.
Yeah, for Chris Paul. And
yeah, that one's a little different. 13 hours ago, the Boston Celtics tweeted, "I go out there and leave everything I have on the floor." End of quote. Nobody hustles harder than Marcus Smart with a highlight mixtape video. 13 hours ago, they traded him that night, very night. And they tweet out this video.
Life comes at you fast.
Oh, that's awkward.
But so does the hype train.
Yep.
Go Cougs.
That's a great ending.